No playing.
Listen up, nerds. We're talking about Morkborg.
Yes, again.
Again. Mm-hmm. We had some audio issues, so we're having to re-record this one.
Yeah. That's my fault.
Computers.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can't live with them, can't live without them. Just like printers.
I mean, we can. We did for thousands of years.
Yeah, but now we can, because that's where all of our things are held.
Are held.
Mm-hmm. Like,
oh boy.
So, can you now live without Rule 34?
Molly.
I mean, you specifically.
You can't just make me laugh when I'm depressed like this, Molly. It's against the rules.
Well, buckle up, because I got a lot of one-liners, and this cookie is delicious.
So, oh man, Morkborg, what a fucking book. It's
mm-hmm.
It's weird, it's bizarre, it's edgy,
mm-hmm.
It's goth, it's everything 13-year-old Dylan would have wanted.
It's goth.
And didn't exist back then. It is very goth. I think it's goth punk art style.
Mm-hmm.
The book is garish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole thing is like this really bright yellow with like black sketch, kind of like a skeleton wearing like a goat head.
Mm.
Like all the art is like a lot of cyans and yellows and magentas.
It's very
with
striking.
A lot of black. Yeah, like super striking, super evocative kind of visuals in this book. And there's like not a single page where there isn't some kind of artwork on it.
Mm.
And like, it's like, whoa, man, it's hard to even put into words. Like, you will be engaged reading this book. It is not like it's not like you're sitting down and reading a textbook like a lot of these TTRPG books are these days.
Oh.
Like,
I read
the whole thing reads.
Sometimes.
Yeah, it can be. I definitely did read the Pathfinder rule books cover to cover.
I meant actual textbooks, but yeah.
Listen, I haven't been to school in over decades, so leave me alone.
Well, according to some classes, basically anything can be a textbook if you try hard enough.
I got this tissue box. Read the ingredients. That's your textbook.
Mm-hmm.
So this book jumps.
Tell me about the marketing for this tissue. Sorry. Go ahead.
This book jumps straight into the action. There's not like a foreword to it. There's not like a set of dedications or like a table of contents or even like a, hey, this is a TTRPG in case this is your first one thing. No, page one is like, here's a bunch of awful shit your players can get if you feel like being a dickhead.
Wasn't it like just straight up traps on the first page?
There's like traps on that page. There's like loot you can get out of graves.
Mm.
It's like literally the first thing on the page is the Ashen Ring is a finger width portal that annihilates whatever is put into it. It's literally like a ring that if you pick it up and put it on, you lose that finger.
Wow.
And that's its whole purpose.
Just like Frodo.
The next line is like, this vile flute, whenever played, will animate a fetus-sized flesh golem from the nearest corpse. And I had been awake for 30 minutes and I read that shit and I was like, I think me and this game are going to get along just fine.
I'm like, oh, all right.
It's bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
The game is, for one, the whole book also reads like you're reading scripture out of a satanic Bible. Like, if you're not into that, maybe pick something else. If you don't like swear words in your Christian Minecraft server, Morkborg, probably not for you.
Christian Minecraft server.
But this game is super, 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 super Gygaxian. What do I mean by that? I mean, don't get attached to your characters. They will die.
Hmm.
It's not a, oh, they'll probably die or they might. They will.
Hmm.
They're going to die. This is inevitable because the game ends with the apocalypse. The world is over. All your characters are dead.
Mm-hmm.
There is no good ending. There's no saving the world. The apocalypse happens.
Doesn't it say to burn the book afterwards, too?
It, in fact, tells you to burn the book.
Which seems like, if you had to keep buying books every time you wanted to play, it'd be expensive.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to do that, but
But it tells you to.
I respect them. I respect them for telling me to do it.
You gotta follow instructions so that the authors can continue making money.
I wonder how much money they make off of people who actually do burn the book. That's something I want to find out.
I bet no one does. The system. Go ahead.
I'm sure at least one person has. At least one, probably more. Mm-hmm. But the system, super simple. This is a rules light pared down. This is like D&D, and you strip away all of the fluff, and then you strip away all the core mechanics, and you're really just left with like the frame of the car, and you're having to ride around on that. That is what this system is. Very simple, fully D20 based, with a few other dice sprinkled in for damage. Mm-hmm. Your stats aren't a numerical thing. You don't have like an 18 means you get a plus 4. No, it's like you have it's minus 3 to plus 6. That is the scale. There's not a numerical value attached to the minus 3 or the plus 6. It's just the minus 3 or the plus 6 or the plus 2 or the minus 1. That is your stat value. Hmm. With 12 being the standard difficulty for all rolls. Now you may notice that that's a little bit higher than 10. Which would be the exact midpoint, meaning most things are meant to be a little bit more difficult than just being a walk in the park. It's just a tiny bit above average, and the players roll all the dice in terms of attacking and defending. Mm-hmm. It's not the players get a turn and they roll their attack die, and then the GM gets a turn and he rolls his attack die. No, the GM will decide this monster is attacking you, roll to defend.
I suddenly was like, you mean all the players roll all at once? That seems chaotic. No, that would be crazy. But it would be fun.
No, there are turns. It would be chaos. Are you sure?
It would be like Christmas morning at someone's house, and all of the children get to open it up at once.
I don't like that. My family's too big.
My family's also huge, but we... I remember when I turned into more of an adult, and they finally were like, we have... small children now. Many. Excuse me. And they are out of control.
This is going to be great content. This excuse episode is going to kick ass.
Because I burp? This is what? Why did you feed me carbonated beverages?
I didn't. What are you talking about? We were in different states.
Your fault. You fed me carbonated beverages.
I've never physically met you in my life.
Small children opening all at the same time. Some people do it because controlling each individual toddler to say thank you and to not rip up their siblings' toys is like a nightmare by itself.
Convincing a turtle to fly. So yeah, players will roll the d20 for both attacking and defending. And then you will add certain modifiers to that based on your core ability scores. Mm-hmm. Your core abilities are agility, which is kind of quick and dexterous you are. Presence, which is kind of all of the mental stats rolled into one. It's kind of like your intelligence and your wisdom and your charisma. It's just your kind of like strength of mind, basically. Strength is then your strength of body, and toughness is how good you are at taking a punch.
Which is surprisingly not underneath body strength, like... they put intelligence underneath mental fortitude, and like, that's, I feel like, based on previous games I've played, that sounds weird.
It kind of makes sense, because spellcasting isn't really a thing in this game. Neither is diplomacy. It's really just kind of a shit show all around. At the beginning of each and every day in game, you will roll, as the GM, you will roll a die. Hmm. And this die is kind of agreed upon by the group for the purpose of determining how long you want this whole campaign thing to be, if you're playing a campaign at all. Because this game does suit one-off games very well because of its very ephemeral nature. So if you want it to be a very long kind of campaign, it could be a D100. If you want it to be a very short campaign, it could be as small as a D2.
It's just
every time, that is a coin. Every time you roll a 1 on that die, it fulfills a prophecy. It is called a misery. Every time you roll a one, the GM will roll 2d6s. The first one will determine which psalm, and the second one will determine which line in the psalm. And that will determine the exact misery that comes to pass. Can be anything from, like, all of the inhabitants of this one city disappear overnight, to all these weird grubs come burrow out of the ice in the frozen north and begin, like, eating the flesh of the living. It could be a crack opens in the earth and poisonous gas floods the entire planet over the course of 10 days. But the seventh time this happens, the seventh misery is the world ends, everyone dies, your game is over, burn the book.
Mm.
Yeah. So there's no getting out of it alive. It doesn't matter how many dragons you slew. It doesn't matter how many evil kings you overthrew. It doesn't matter how many prophecies you fulfilled in terms of being the sacred, but it doesn't matter. The world is currently in the process of ending, and you cannot stop it. That is the end of the game. It's the literal, actual apocalypse.
And here we have the instructions explicitly saying burn the book. And so I
explicitly,
if you don't do that, then you're just not a good player, I guess.
Yeah, clearly bad GM didn't burn the book after campaign ended.
And you're like, all right, GM, please go buy another book.
What if you only got the PDF? I can't set my phone on fire.
Oh, but you could print it out on one of the devil's machines.
Print out the whole game and then burn it.
I mean, it could also, you could also just print out the last page and burn it.
That's not burning the book. That's burning the back cover.
That's true. But you also mentioned Psalms, so you could print out the prophecy and burn it. Quote unquote.
I guess.
I don't know. Whatever you want to do. It says burn the entire book, so you better have like 17 in the back.
You better have like just a pocket full of these ready to go if you intend on making this a common game you play.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about the setting of the game?
The setting? So they're in the beginning of time, I guess, a basilisk was born. She, just known as She, because giving them a singular name is a difficult thing to do because each basilisk is born with two heads.
So what's called
the first basilisk?
Did I hear he or
she? Female.
Fee. Oh, F-E. She.
No, she. S-H-E.
Oh, okay. I'm not getting she. Them consonants over this thing. Sorry. Go ahead.
She gave birth to he.
Uh-huh. Is that the other head?
No, that is one of her children. So all of her children, she would kill them because she knew they were a threat to her power.
That's dumb. They could have been a hydra.
Well, she threw them down into this massive pit. I believe it is now called the Valley of Unfortunate Undead. Because it's just full of undead.
Mm.
You go there, you're probably going to die, and you're probably going to come back as a zombie. It's just a bad place to be. But he, one of his heads, started having prophecies. And these are the forbidden psalms.
Excuse me. I didn't know every basilisks. I guess the most I learned about basilisks was from Harry Potter. I didn't realize they had two heads.
Now, this is very much their specific interpretation of the word anyway.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Because I believe the original basilisk and the cockatrice were just the same thing.
Really?
And then people, yeah. And then
you know, I guess Old English is really weird, so yeah. What are you going to do?
So we now know that there is a place called the Valley of Unfortunate Undead. There's like the Shadow Keep, which is where a dark king reigns over this decrepit castle. And there's like a bunch of unfortunate cursed individuals that live in the castle with him, mm-hmm. and are trying to survive in it as it slowly crumbles to ruin. There's this kingdom to the north ruled by a queen who wants to fall in love, wants to find like her knight in shining armor, but everything she looks at, like all the color drains from it and all the happiness and vibrancy leeches away. And it is her cold heart that has caused the cold wind to come and like freeze everything. It's all very like a black metal album made into a D&D or like tabletop game setting.
That's real depressing. What if she's just depressed?
Like, she's very depressed. There's like another city where like everything's kind of gone to shit because the king of that city has realized that every single one of the Basilisk's prophecies has come true. There's no stopping the end of the world. So he's literally just waiting for all the miseries to start coming true so that he can gather up all of his people and march them off a cliff to spare them the suffering.
Oh, really? Salt in the wound.
Yeah, it's all very dire. The monsters are pretty crazy. Like, goblins are fun in this setting because if a goblin attacks you, every goblin was once human. And the only way to tell that is to look in their eyes and see the pain and realization that they are not in control of their own bodies.
Okay.
Because so if you get attacked... So
what races are there?
Humans.
Humans. So human is the only race. And like, are there elves or anything? Like, are they also a derivative just like goblins?
Nope.
So everything's just a derivative of humans, all the enemies, except for like snakes, I guess. I don't know. You know what I mean?
There's like trolls. There's monsters.
Wait.
There's just not like playable races. Like there's like trolls. There's creepy dolls that have come to life. There's giant spiders. There's horrible two-headed basilisks that will devour you whole. Those are real in this setting. It's just like there's not like elves, there's not dwarves, there's not like pixies or anything. Like it's, you're taking the worst bits of fantasy and making them into a thing. It's really like a lot of Eastern European folklore kind of thing, but taking all the good bits out.
All the good bits. Yeah. Do you mean all the positive bits or all the good bits?
A little of column A, a little of column B.
Oh, fine. Okay.
But what I like about goblins is that like it's a curse. If a goblin attacks you and you survive, but you don't kill the goblin that attacked you, then a week later you turn into a goblin.
Just like everything, it's a fungus.
I don't think they're a fungus. I think it's a literal actual curse.
Oh, it could also be a parasite, like that fungus that takes over bodies of ants.
Ophiocordyceps fungus?
Yeah. Do you know what? They're
fucked up.
There's so many. Dude, I was having a conversation with someone about plants because I wanted to learn about the ploidy of plants. So humans are diploid, and our gametes are haploid. Plants can be triploidy without having any of the Down syndrome. They can be even like, I think, more than three ploidy. That's the number of chromosomes you have. I should have mentioned that first.
What if all plants do have Down syndrome, Molly? We just can't tell because they're fucking plants.
I don't know. Like I said, plants are complicated. They are wicked
complicated. Life is complicated.
Well, life is really complicated, but like mammals in comparison, like eukaryotes, mammals, like reptiles, so forth, they are not nearly as complicated as plants. Plants and fungus are very complicated. Single-celled organisms and all of our animal friends, not that complicated. Not as complicated as plants.
So characters and Morkborg.
Sorry. I got excited.
They're very, very quick to make. In fact, they're so quick to make that character classes, completely optional feature. Don't use them in your first game.
Oh, right. You said that basically you could just make a character with like a couple of roles and then that's it.
Yep.
Which helps justify your characters dying so often because it's not like a D&D character, where you've like dumped yourself into it for hours. It's just like a role and it's done.
Yeah. And I honestly love that about this. I'm not normally a Gygaxian game kind of guy because I've talked about it before. Like whenever you make a character and you spend a lot of time crafting them and making a backstory and all this stuff, you get invested. Mm-hmm. So it sucks when that character dies because you have this emotional investment that you've put into this and now it's just gone. There's nothing you can do about that. And the
dread of doing additional work. Don't forget that.
So
laziness also plays into that decision.
Like normally I just don't like it. like having character deaths. I try to avoid them in my games. Sometimes a character death is unavoidable. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the dice really just don't roll in your favor, mm-hmm. and it does happen. And I think as long as it's like suitably like one, it, as long as it wasn't like fudged to be against you, like that sucks. I hate that no matter what way you cut it. Don't kill your player characters intentionally. Mm-hmm. But as long as like a character gets to go down fighting, like I'm kind of cool with that, but I prefer not to deal with it. But within the context of this setting and how the book is written within the context of this black metal world and how the world is going to end and your characters aren't the heroes, you're not going out to save the world. The whole purpose of what your characters are doing is just, we're going to see how long we can survive in a world that is actively ending. And death is a very constant thing. And especially because the characters are so quick to make, I like it within the context of this system. Because it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Also, again, reminds me of Dark Souls and any of the Souls games like Bloodborne. You're always set in a world that seems to be finishing.
Rather, it's always on the back foot.
Yeah, you never get to be a part of the, I don't know, the expansion of it, just the end of it. Well, like, I don't know. World-ending stories are always so compelling. Because it makes you question, what would I do in this situation? How would I feel about this? And it would be just so awful. But you got to just do the thing, or otherwise you're going to die early. And what's the point? And yeah, existential. And
especially within the context of Dark Souls, I think it's even worse. Because mm-hmm. like you die all the time in Dark Souls. It's not death that really is the ultimate end there. It's the losing of yourself, going hollow.
Yeah.
And that is a million times scarier to me, mm-hmm. of like losing who you are and not being able to remember yourself and becoming just a mindless monster, even though your body is still crawling around.
Wow.
Ew.
And think of the parallels between that and dementia and Alzheimer's. And
Yeah. Listen, and if I start displaying symptoms of that shit in my life,
I think that just makes you angry.
If I start displaying symptoms of Alzheimer's in my life, take me out back, bring the shotgun. I'm going the way of Old Yeller. I ain't going through that shit.
I know.
I ain't doing it.
The thought of losing yourself to it is actually more terrifying to me than I think a lot of, like, actually a lot of normally scary topics. But, like, you just get to watch yourself just decay, but you're not leaving at the end of the cycle. You're just going to be there forever. Terrifying.
Yep, not doing it. Nope. Not for Dylan. So characters in this game, classless by default. There are classes, but they really change how like you roll the dice and certain things you pick from. So they add a level of complication where those characters, maybe you do want them to survive a little bit longer because you're putting in the extra work. So at that point, be very careful. Excuse me. But the kind of class identity your characters can have as these basic classless characters is, you are what you own. You will start the game by rolling 2d6, multiply that by 10, that's how much silver you have. You have a water skin, you roll a d4, you have that many days worth of food. You roll a d6, you might get a storage item, you might not. It could be a backpack, it could be a wagon. You roll a d12 for your first piece of equipment. It could be anything from like a tent, a tinderbox, to a magic scroll. You roll another d12 for your second piece of equipment. Could be extra rations, could be like a hunting kit, could be any number of useful things. You will then roll a d10 for your weapon. If you rolled a scroll, you will roll a d6 instead. You roll a d4 for your armor, or if you rolled a scroll, you roll a d2 instead. And then you will spend the remaining silver you have on any equipment you would like. And then you can name your character if you feel like it, because again, they're probably going to die. And at that point, you're done.
I like how similar this character creation system is to that game that we played, Break, with 3 exclamation points. Really simple, and so it makes it fun. I don't think Break is designed to have like character deaths nearly as often as this game is designed
not at all.
But the fact that they've really like boiled down character creation to just do a couple of things will help you figure out your background to help fit in the story 100% of the time. And
I did miss one step.
Okay.
It's for each one of your stats, you will roll 3d6s, I believe.
Oh, nice.
And then it will give you like a table. You don't take, like, if you roll 3 sixes, your stat is not an 18. It's just a +3.
Oh,
like
okay.
I said, there's not like a numerical value. It's just the +3 is your stat value.
Are the plus numbers related to the total numerical value on the dice? Like they have, like if you roll from this to this, then it's this. And then if you roll from this to this,
yeah, like
then it's this.
Rolling higher gives you a better result.
Yeah.
It's just that's not what I meant.
Do they have like a table or something? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. It's the table you roll on will determine your initial stat values. The actual numerical value you roll on the die doesn't matter.
Okay.
You're not keeping track of that. It's just the +3 that matters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Combat is also a very kind of quick and dirty affair. So at the beginning of every combat, the GM will roll a D6. On a 1 to a 3, the enemies will go first. On a 4 to 6, the players will go first. And it's just whatever order you want to go in. As long as you haven't had a turn, you can then take a turn. And who goes is just you decide. The players decide. The player character's HP is their toughness value plus a D8.
Hmm.
Now, noting that the maximum starting value for any stat is +3. If you roll a maximum on this with a D8, your starting HP maxes out at 11. Most medium-sized weapons, things like a sword or like a spear, something that is like an actual weapon meant for war that you would go fight a person with, will roll a D10 for damage.
Mm-hmm.
Given that your maximum HP at level 1 is 11 and that you're unlikely to get that, if you go into negative HP at all, if you go to even negative 1, your character is dead. It means a single hit could kill your character outright.
Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned that armor doesn't really prevent damage as much as it just softens it.
Yeah. So depending on armor has 3 tiers, where the first tier is you roll a D2 and remove that much damage. The second tier is roll a D4, remove that much damage. The third tier is roll a D6, remove that much damage.
Mm-hmm.
So armor can very well save your life.
But you might get bruised.
Yeah, right? But you can also lose your armor.
Yeah, that's true.
And well, also just straight ass die.
I like how realistic it sounds. Like, if you're not wearing any armor and someone comes at you with a sword, you're going to die. That's very reasonable. If you're wearing full plates, you're going to get hurt because that doesn't prevent the momentum. But you're not going to get sliced through, which is the whole point.
Yeah. So. Combat in this game, quick, brutal, meant to be over with very fast, and a lot of people kind of have it in their head like, oh, we will do the honorable thing and meet our enemies head on. No, fuck that. Take your enemies from behind, take them out quickly and quietly. That is your best chance of survival.
Sneaky archer.
And survival is the goal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So to roll for melee damage, you will roll a strength test with a DR of 12. And then you find your weapon's damage die and roll that to determine damage if you roll above the DR of 12 and succeed. For range, it is the same thing, except it is presence, DR 12. There are a couple circumstances where that DR can change, but that is the gist of combat in a nutshell. Roll the die. Did you get above a 12? Cool. You hit, do damage. Now, we mentioned that at any negative HP, you die instantly. If you land exactly at 0, you are in a state called broken, where you will roll a D4 to determine what happens to you at 0 HP. And this goes from being unconscious for a few minutes to breaking an arm or a leg or losing an arm or a leg to just dying instantly anyway. If you critically hit with an attack roll, you will deal double damage and reduce the enemy's armor by 1 tier. And if you critically hit on a defense roll, you get a free attack. Nice. If you fumble or roll a nat 1 on an attack roll, your weapon is broken, completely unusable.
Are there surprise attacks?
Yes, there are.
Okay, all right. And counter attacks. I was thinking about counter attacks. You said that in order to get another strike, so it's a probability on getting a counterattack and not like a certainty based on like your class. Like in D&D.
You have to roll the defense crit to get another attack.
Okay, out. And it's not like a feat you can take.
No.
Okay.
There are no feats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. So on a defense fumble, you will take double damage and your armor is reduced by one tier. Any armor reduced below the first tier is destroyed and completely unusable. So if you sit down and rest, you know, have a meal, have some drink, you will restore a D4's worth of HP. If you rest for a full night, you will restore a D6 worth of HP. If you do not have food and drink, you restore no HP, and after 2 days, you will begin to starve and lose a D4 HP per day.
Mm-hmm.
An infected character, as in someone who has an infection, does not benefit from resting and will instead lose D6 HP per day until the infection is healed, which requires, like, fucking antiseptics and shit. In a combat, if the enemy leader is killed, if half the enemy group is dead, or a single enemy in combat is reduced down to a third HP, they will roll a morale test. If the GM rolls 2d6 and it is higher than the enemy's morale value, they will roll a d6. On a 1 to 3, the enemy will run away. On a 4 to 6, they will surrender to you. So combat almost never resolves to kill them to the last man kind of thing.
So a successful morale roll means that they try to get away.
Yeah, roll that morale test. If it goes above the enemy's morale value, it means that their morale has broken and they're either going to try and run away or surrender.
Okay, so that's not successful. That would be a failure.
Yeah. But that's only for the enemies. The players don't do that.
Yeah, I'm just double checking.
Now, this game calls leveling up getting better. It's a bit of a weird name for it because you might not even get better.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you might get significantly worse.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing you will do is you will roll 6d10s. If the result of 6d10s is higher than your current maximum HP, you will increase your HP by a d6. You will then roll a d6 for loot. On a 1 to 3, you get nothing. On a 4, you will roll 3d10s and get that much silver. On a 5, you will get an unclean scroll, which is kind of attack and enemy debuff magic. And 6 is a sacred scroll, which is a lot of like utility, heal my friends, do that kind of stuff magic. You will then roll a d6 against every one of your abilities. If the d6 is equal to or greater than your ability, you will increase it by 1 to a maximum of plus 6. If it is less than your current ability, you will reduce that ability by 1 to a minimum of minus 3. A result of a 1 on that d6 will always lower your ability score to the minimum of minus 3.
It's nice that they try and keep you average. Kind of makes for good storytelling. Yeah, it really does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it keeps you averaged out. You're probably not going to be exceptional at anything unless you get really lucky,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to be kind of like middle of the road at just about everything.
Mm. Is there anything you can excel at? Like, are there skills or something?
Nope. If you do go with the optional class stuff, there are like features the classes can pick from. You only get one,
mm-hmm.
but like it gives you like a bit of an edge, but also not really, because then your stat allocations get different for starting stats.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets a lot of weird stuff going on. So every player will begin, play by rolling a D2, or basically flipping a coin, and you will start play with that many omens. When a player's omens are depleted and their character rests for at least 6 hours, they will roll another D2 and regain that many omens, but you can never have more than 2.
Are omens good or bad?
They're good.
Okay.
By spending an omen, you can deal maximum damage with one attack. You can re-roll a die roll, being yours or someone else's. Like, if somebody rolls like a crit against you, you can force them to re-roll it. You can lower damage dealt to you by a d6. You can neutralize a crit or a fumble. Or you can lower one test DR by minus 4. These are kind of your only little special boy tokens you get to keep your character alive. And you are very incentivized to use them because of how quickly your character can die.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of omens your group has really kind of determines the length between rests and how much food you're going to have to keep track of, how much water you're going to have to keep track of, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. They're a little like action points.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Fabula points in Fabula Ultima.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
We talked about Fabula Ultima, Molly.
Did we? Have you talked to me pretty before? Sure we did. I can't remember shit.
Optional tables in this game include terrible traits. Roll two d20s and apply the traits you get off of this table to your character. They can be traits from being like cowardly to having a nervous tick to being incredibly nihilistic or excessively cruel or kicking dogs as a hobby.
So like, can you build a character without any debuffs or are they required?
These are not required. These are all optional tables.
Okay.
That I'm going over right now.
I mean, like, they sound like way more fun than not having them, but, you know.
Yeah, they give your character, like, personality and stuff, but you may or may not want to go through them depending on how quickly you're having to make characters.
you just, like, assign them a number and then randomly pick the number.
You'll then roll a d20 to determine a distinctive physical characteristic,
mm-hmm.
from like having a very manic stare to having decayed teeth to being covered in blasphemous tattoo to even being unnervingly clean and beautiful.
This reminds me of rolling dice to determine, like, if you're really, you have a lot of charisma and you roll your dice to determine the size of your genitalia. This is what this reminds me of. Where everyone will just sit around while you're making your character and you like roll something where it goes, you got incredibly crooked teeth. And everyone's like, ha, you got that.
There's a game I used to like to play a lot called Anima Beyond Fantasy. And mm-hmm. we kind of touched on it on the podcast a little bit. But one of the things you actually do have to roll is an attractiveness stat,
mm-hmm.
which always just felt weird to me.
Mm-hmm. It is a little bit like, weird. It's fun in the moment, but like if you think about it for more than, you have a big penis sort of way, then it's weird.
It's just goofy. Like, I could roll this really cool character that, like, I'm super invested in, and then it turns out that they're just ugly. It's like, I don't want that.
You're like, I built a picture of this character in my head, and you thwarted it. I guess it makes it, like, if you were, as a DM, requiring your players to pick from the debuffs, or, like, to roll and pick a debuff, it would make for better storytelling, personally. And I guess it would also help people get out of their comfort zone of just building pretty people all the time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like them. I don't like the idea of just like a flat up and down attractiveness stat.
Yeah.
That's just weird to me.
People treat the charisma stat a little like that, is what I've heard.
Yeah, they do. You'll then roll a d20 for a bad habit, from obsessively collecting small sharp stones to mm-hmm. being a pyromaniac to one that actually like appeals to me as a player is I will not use a knife without testing its sharpness on myself first.
Let me shave all these arm hairs off.
No, so what they do is like they've got scars all up and down their arms because, okay, I got this new knife, I need to see if it works, and they cut their arm open.
I feel like they would have also zero arm hair. They'd have a combo of no arm hair, be covered in scars, and you're like, what are you... What? They're like, I don't have any other way to test this. I'm like, you could, like, just sharpen it, like, if you're really worried.
It's a bad habit. The last optional table is Troubling Tales. Now, this one's one of my favorites because it says you can roll a d20 or throw a knife at the following page.
This book really does not. Oh, no, wants you to
destroy it.
Wait, let's flip that script. Let's say the authors really want you to buy multiple copies.
So for this one, you'll roll a d20 or throw a knife at the page to determine a little bit of like a background story for your character. And it's small, simple things, but it can be anything from like having a bounty on your head to being at war with all the crows in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Crows just hate you.
That's hilarious. Also, crows are fucking smart. Like, they are really very smart. And they already form packs like that.
Yeah. So the quick and dirty. The game is very brutal. It's very unforgiving. Don't get attached to your characters. And dying is fun.
Mm.
Also, maybe don't play this game unless you're like a full grown ass adult.
Yeah.
Also, maybe discuss what are some no-no topics with your group before playing this game. Also, because it's going to get real fucked up.
Does the book itself have like an age like rating in case someone is like... Well,
16 plus, it says.
Okay, all right. As long as it has like a displayed age rating. I bet, yeah. I think they have to, but sometimes I've seen books that don't. I don't know. All right, yeah, continue.
This one do. Okay, good. Well, I mean that. So continuing, it's if you want to find us on Facebook, that is facebook.com/d20dudes. If you want to find us on Twitter, that is twitter.com/d20dudes or @d20dudes on the Twitter. If you would like to join us in the Discord, there is a link to that down in the description. It is open to everyone. Come and say hi if you would like. And if you would like to monetarily support the podcast, only $3 a month will get you a shout out on every episode, like we have for you, Molly, our friend Jennifer, our friend Word, our big fan Ken Thomas, who has been supporting us from the beginning, and Zam Wow.
Huzzah. It's us.
Our patrons.
We pay money to be here. I mean,
for some reason.
Well, because you're my friend and I like supporting you.
Friends. This is ordinarily where we'd roll the D20 to determine what next week's episode is going to be about. But again, this is the second time we're having to record this. So we already rolled the D20 the last time we recorded this. So we're going to talk about dragons.
You could roll it again for shits and giggles.
I guess we could.
Do you have like a giant topic on dragons and want to roll a subtopic?
No, I mean, dragons are kind of a broad topic and path. You know what, fuck it, we'll roll the d20 again.
Okay.
If I roll dragons again, I will consider it divine providence.
Okay, providence
and prominence.
No.
Providence. No, I'm saying no, because my gods are different than everyone else's gods, and I'm gonna say mine's better because it made me roll this twice. I rolled a 7. Actually, you know what, I'm very much cool with talking about that instead of dragons next week, because that is the Dark Archive of Pathfinder 2nd Edition, which is absolutely great. I love that book. It's a lot of like spooky cryptid shit.
Ooh.
For Pathfinder 2. I really like it a lot. So we'll talk about the Dark Archive next week. I've already read that through, but I'll give it another pass through so I can brush up on it.
I want to be one of those old school conspiracy theorists that are just like really into cryptids sometimes because it sounds hilarious. Can I make people
check
believe
out,
me? Sorry, go ahead.
Check out the Cryptonaut podcast then. It's one of my favorite podcasts and I love those gents. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.